An alle Aufsichtspersonen, verteilen Sie jetzt die Aufgabenbogen für den Prüfungsteil Hörverstehen. Die Prüfung beginnt in 2 Minuten. An die Kandidatinnen und Kandidaten, beschriften Sie jetzt das Deckblatt des Aufgabenbogens Hörverstehen. Achtung! Lesen Sie die Aufgaben erst, wenn der englische Text beginnt. Kaufmännische Berufsmatura 2018, Englisch, Serie A und B. Sie können jetzt zur ersten Aufgabe gehen. This part of the examination consists of 3 different listening comprehension tasks. There will be pauses before and after each task to give you time to read the questions and to check your answers. You will hear each task twice. In the first part of the test, you will hear an introduction to a radio phone-in program about modern lifestyles. As you listen, fill in the gaps 1 to 10 in the notes below. In some gaps, more than one word is necessary for a complete answer. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 1. Ready?
Good afternoon and welcome to our program, Modern Lifestyles. Regular listeners will remember the health and diet program we broadcast earlier in the year featuring Neil Marsh, an Australian accountant turned record-breaking athlete. Neil is now managing director of the 5 successful health clubs in London, and he's a firm believer in being positive about life. His philosophy is that in order to have a healthy and fulfilled life, which he obviously felt being an accountant, even in Australia, didn't offer him, you have to enjoy everything you do. He promotes a healthy diet and exercise in order to support one's work, family, and social life. With this in mind, he invented the method called total living. It certainly served him well during his successful career as an athlete, and it's an obvious feature of the health clubs Neil runs in the city. But he believes it can help everybody. His latest project is a book he has just written, which is a guide to how physical exercise can improve a timetable already filled with a stressful job and hectic social life. As the term total living implies, we should see our lives as a whole, not in isolated compartments, and this means integrating all the different aspects of our lives. Neil thinks that too often we don't build in time for what we need most, in this case, physical exercise. You may think that combining work, play, and exercise sounds daunting, but Neil also argues very much against some current health trends. For example, assuring us that the sun is beneficial and not the danger to our health and long life, which the anti-sun lobby would have us believe. And then there's dieting. How many of you can honestly say you've never considered going on a diet? If you talk to Neil, he will insist that you should avoid slimming diets at all costs. Well, we're fortunate to have Neil back in the studio with us today, and he's going to answer some of your questions during the next half an hour or so. But before...
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Good afternoon and welcome to our program, Modern Lifestyles. Regular listeners will remember the health and diet program we broadcast earlier in the year featuring Neil Marsh, an Australian accountant turned record-breaking athlete. Neil is now managing director of the 5 successful health clubs in London, and he's a firm believer in being positive about life. His philosophy is that in order to have a healthy and fulfilled life, which he obviously felt being an accountant, even in Australia, didn't offer him, you have to enjoy everything you do. He promotes a healthy diet and exercise in order to support one's work, family, and social life. With this in mind, he invented the method called total living. It certainly served him well during his successful career as an athlete, and it's an obvious feature of the health clubs Neil runs in the city. But he believes it can help everybody. His latest project is a book he has just written, which is a guide to how physical exercise can improve a timetable already filled with a stressful job and hectic social life. As the term total living implies, we should see our lives as a whole, not in isolated compartments, and this means integrating all the different aspects of our lives. Neil thinks that too often we don't build in time for what we need most, in this case, physical exercise. You may think that combining work, play, and exercise sounds daunting, but Neil also argues very much against some current health trends. For example, assuring us that the sun is beneficial and not the danger to our health and long life, which the anti-sun lobby would have us believe. And then there's dieting. How many of you can honestly say you've never considered going on a diet? If you talk to Neil, he will insist that you should avoid slimming diets at all costs. Well, we're fortunate to have Neil back in the studio with us today, and he's going to answer some of your questions during the next half an hour or so. But before...
This is the end of task one. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers. Now turn to task two. In the second part of the test, you will hear an interview with an architect on Barbados. For questions 1 to 10, mark the best answer, A, B, or C. You now have 90 seconds in which to look at task 2. Ready?
We've invited Craig Howard, an architect who designs luxury apartments and hotels in Barbados. He was born and educated in England, but moved to Barbados 20 years ago to work for another architect. He ended up staying and setting up his own practice. Craig, could you describe a typical working day for us?
Sure. I usually get up at 6:30 in the morning and make some coffee while catching the news headlines on television. After that, I switch on my laptop. We have clients in different time zones in places like Dubai, France, or Germany, so I always receive emails overnight. The building industry starts early, and I'm usually on one of our sites by 7:30. Barbados might be a small place, but I do a lot of driving, visiting sites all over the island. It can take me up to an hour to get to the first site, followed by a meeting in a sometimes hot cabin, dealing with any issues. I'll put on my hard hat, climb across the scaffolding, and check that everything is going according to plan.
Do you work mostly alone?
Well, I manage the company on my own, but it's been so successful that I usually have 4 or 5 architects in the office to make sure we don't have to turn down any customers. Often we also have consultants visiting. We might have an interior designer from America, a kitchen designer from London, a lighting designer from Australia, another furniture specialist from Thailand. We all come together to create these special properties. These projects can go on for anything up to 18 months, so we become very close as a team.
What do you like most about your job?
Although I spend a lot of time coordinating all the people involved in different projects, I still enjoy creating. It's part of me, it's part of my makeup. Sometimes I'll sit late at night and carry on designing. If there's something on my mind that I want to get on paper, and I mean on paper, not on tablet, then I'll carry on working on it. I'm passionate, you know, about pens and pencils because they are the tools I was brought up with and it's how I learned. Even to this day, I use the pen on my tablet. I notice that the younger generation uses the keyboard and the mouse and so on.
And what do you find the most challenging?
You're always thinking on your feet. Sometimes the client changes his mind halfway through the project, which is the nightmare of all architects. If that happens, you must quickly redesign and reissue drawings because the completion date stays the same. You just have to adapt. We're used to it. We've worked like that for years.
It sounds like your days are very busy.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I also often miss lunch simply because I have to drive across the island to get to the office. If I'm visiting a hotel that is fully operational, they might offer me something. Otherwise, it could be a sandwich in my hand any time between 12:30 and 3 in the afternoon. With the faster pace of life these days, I find lunch has become very unimportant. Many years ago, I would spend time over it, but now I tend to say, I'll just skip it and have a nice meal this evening.
So when do you get home in the evening?
We're working on about 12 different projects right now, and they're all at various stages, of course. The staff will start to disappear around 5 p.m, but there are always one or two of us here later on. I keep going with black tea. I have a cupboard full of different teas. I like the ritual of making it myself. I tried to find some time to do design work. That's why I usually go on until about 8 in the evening. Then it takes me about half an hour to reach my home in the south of the island.
Your work sounds very fulfilling. Do you even have time for any other interests?
Having designed so many kitchens and worked with so many different chefs, I've developed an interest in cooking. It's relaxing, allows me to concentrate on something different. It's such an all-consuming job, you're never really away from it, and it really helps me to switch off for an hour or two. I always try to take some time at the end of a long day to prepare some dinner, usually something like fish and steamed vegetables.
Thank you very much for your time.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
We've invited Craig Howard, an architect who designs luxury apartments and hotels in Barbados. He was born and educated in England, but moved to Barbados 20 years ago to work for another architect. He ended up staying and setting up his own practice. Craig, could you describe a typical working day for us?
Sure. I usually get up at 6:30 in the morning and make some coffee while catching the news headlines on television. After that, I switch on my laptop. We have clients in different time zones in places like Dubai, France, or Germany, so I always receive emails overnight. The building industry starts early, and I'm usually on one of our sites by 7:30. Barbados might be a small place, but I do a lot of driving, visiting sites all over the island. It can take me up to an hour to get to the first site, followed by a meeting in a sometimes hot cabin, dealing with any issues. I'll put on my hard hat, climb across the scaffolding, and check that everything is going according to plan.
Do you work mostly alone?
Well, I manage the company on my own, but it's been so successful that I usually have 4 or 5 architects in the office to make sure we don't have to turn down any customers. Often we also have consultants visiting. We might have an interior designer from America, a kitchen designer from London, a lighting designer from Australia, another furniture specialist from Thailand. We all come together to create these special properties. These projects can go on for anything up to 18 months, so we become very close as a team.
What do you like most about your job?
Although I spend a lot of time coordinating all the people involved in different projects, I still enjoy creating. It's part of me, it's part of my makeup. Sometimes I'll sit late at night and carry on designing. If there's something on my mind that I want to get on paper, and I mean on paper, not on tablet, then I'll carry on working on it. I'm passionate, you know, about pens and pencils because they are the tools I was brought up with and it's how I learned. Even to this day, I use the pen on my tablet. I notice that the younger generation uses the keyboard and the mouse and so on.
And what do you find the most challenging?
You're always thinking on your feet. Sometimes the client changes his mind halfway through the project, which is the nightmare of all architects. If that happens, you must quickly redesign and reissue drawings because the completion date stays the same. You just have to adapt. We're used to it. We've worked like that for years.
It sounds like your days are very busy.
Yeah, they are. They are. I mean, I also often miss lunch simply because I have to drive across the island to get to the office. If I'm visiting a hotel that is fully operational, they might offer me something. Otherwise, it could be a sandwich in my hand any time between 12:30 and 3 in the afternoon. With the faster pace of life these days, I find lunch has become very unimportant. Many years ago, I would spend time over it, but now I tend to say, I'll just skip it and have a nice meal this evening.
So when do you get home in the evening?
We're working on about 12 different projects right now, and they're all at various stages, of course. The staff will start to disappear around 5 p.m., but there are always one or two of us here later on. I keep going with black tea. I have a cupboard full of different teas. I like the ritual of making it myself. I tried to find some time to do design work. That's why I usually go on until about 8 in the evening. Then it takes me about half an hour to reach my home in the south of the island.
Your work sounds very fulfilling. Do you even have time for any other interests?
Having designed so many kitchens and worked with so many different chefs, I've developed an interest in cooking. It's relaxing, allows me to concentrate on something different. It's such an all-consuming job, you're never really away from it, and it really helps me to switch off for an hour or two. I always try to take some time at the end of a long day to prepare some dinner, usually something like fish and steamed vegetables.
Thank you very much for your time.
This is the end of task two. Now turn to task three. In the third part of the test, you will hear an interview with a communication consultant who talks about video and teleconferences. For questions 1 to 5, decide whether the statements are true or false. Correct the false ones using up to 5 keywords. You now have 30 seconds in which to look at task 3. Ready?
Carolyn, what's the area you are talking about today?
Video and teleconferencing are a really important part of my work. Nearly every day I run or take part in a telephone conference, and I run video conferences 2 or 3 times a week. I'm constantly thinking about how I can improve my remote conferencing skills.
What are some of the problems you face when remote conferencing?
Telephone conferences make it harder to involve people because you cannot see people's faces and body language. Often, some participants take over and others stay silent. However, if video conferencing is not available, for example, because people are travelling, it might remain the only option. One way to help with that is to try involving people right from the beginning. After the first open discussion, go round the group one by one and ask for their opinion. It's also a good idea to check on what people are thinking or how they're feeling during the conference, and not just at a feedback session at the end.
What else is important for a successful video conference?
I think it's important to start the conference with a statement clearly defining the goal or goals of the meeting. I find this helps to focus the discussions and it motivates people to take part. In fact, I wouldn't just set a general goal at the start, but I would do the same for every item during the discussion. Then you have a better chance of getting people to keep to the point.
Have you got any tips for international video and teleconferences?
When you're working cross-culturally, you need to keep the language simple because different language levels can be a real problem. So it helps if the person running the conference summarizes the discussion at regular intervals. In my experience, this is not done frequently enough during discussions or meetings in general. When there are groups of people with the same native language, I sometimes ask them to discuss a complicated issue in their own language so that any misunderstandings can be sorted out. It can also be helpful to give pairs or small groups discussion tasks. They could log out of the conference call and then call each other separately for, say, 10 minutes. Then they log back in and report. That can sometimes solve language level difficulties and give silent participants a chance to say what they think.
Thank you very much. I'm sure your advice will be useful to quite a few of our listeners who take part in conference calls.
Now listen again and check your answers. Ready?
Carolyn, what's the area you are talking about today?
Video and teleconferencing are a really important part of my work. Nearly every day I run or take part in a telephone conference, and I run video conferences 2 or 3 times a week. I'm constantly thinking about how I can improve my remote conferencing skills.
What are some of the problems you face when remote conferencing?
Telephone conferences make it harder to involve people because you cannot see people's faces and body language. Often, some participants take over and others stay silent. However, if video conferencing is not available, for example, because people are travelling, it might remain the only option. One way to help with that is to try involving people right from the beginning. After the first open discussion, go round the group one by one and ask for their opinion. It's also a good idea to check on what people are thinking or how they're feeling during the conference, and not just at a feedback session at the end.
What else is important for a successful video conference?
I think it's important to start the conference with a statement clearly defining the goal or goals of the meeting. I find this helps to focus the discussions and it motivates people to take part. In fact, I wouldn't just set a general goal at the start, but I would do the same for every item during the discussion. Then you have a better chance of getting people to keep to the point.
Have you got any tips for international video and teleconferences?
When you're working cross-culturally, you need to keep the language simple because different language levels can be a real problem. So it helps if the person running the conference summarizes the discussion at regular intervals. In my experience, this is not done frequently enough during discussions or meetings in general. When there are groups of people with the same native language, I sometimes ask them to discuss a complicated issue in their own language so that any misunderstandings can be sorted out. It can also be helpful to give pairs or small groups discussion tasks. They could log out of the conference call and then call each other separately for, say, 10 minutes. Then they log back in and report. That can sometimes solve language level difficulties and give silent participants a chance to say what they think.
Thank you very much. I'm sure your advice will be useful to quite a few of our listeners who take part in conference calls.
This is the end of task 3. You now have 2 minutes to check your answers. This is the end of the listening comprehension test. Stop writing and hand in your papers.